Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The last word with Matt Cooper.
So for the week trending, we're joined by Kieran Cunningham, chief sports writer with the Irish Daily Star, and Brianna Parkins, Irish Times columnist, remaining as Irish Times columnist, but departing to Australia. And I want to talk to you about that in a moment. But given that you've been amongst us for a number of years, did you share the joy at the Irish athletes this week, the excitement of the relay teams and Rashida Adeleke also in her silver medal in the 400 metres?
Completely. There's something in the water at the minute in Ireland that we have produced so many good 400 metre runners. I mean, you had Phil Healy, who's been keeping the torch lit for all these years as well. I love to see that she was in that relay team. But it's the 400 is really challenging because you need to have the explosive speed and the power of a sprint, but you need to have the mental endurance for a middle distance run, and you need to be able to pace yourself and time yourself. It's considered one of the most...
You spent the last 5 years telling us you know nothing about sport, and you're now delivering this expert treatise on the 400 metres run.
I know. I didn't say I didn't know anything about sport. I said I hated running, and I hated running because I grew up doing athletics. I would have been probably better at athletics, but I loved netball more, so I threw my attention into that. So I spent my whole youth competing in athletics. That's why I hate running now.
Okay.
But I was used to the 400. I was more of a field competitor, high jump and long jump. And
but you're right, it's a tough, tough discipline really to maintain the sprint.
And if you look, if you're ever watching the race and, you know, you're coming down on the first straight, it all looks like this one competitor is pulling ahead. And then if you can just get them on the corner, on the, if you're on the inside lane, like it's really tactical, it's really difficult. So I think the training going on in Ireland must be phenomenal, and I hope more funding gets thrown at the sport, and I really hope that more young people take it up and start running around their backyards.
Kieran, I'll draw you into the microphone there. There you are, our sports expert, and you've been outdone already by Brianna in explaining the 400 metres.
Because the only time I've been to Australia, I was saying to Brianna outside with the Sydney Olympics, and my, one of my standout memories from that is, funny enough, is the women's 400 metre final, because Cathy Freeman won it. And she was, you know, she was native Australian.
That's right.
Background, and she lit the flame, and she had literally the weight of the expectations
she
of
did,
the nation
yeah.
on her shoulders. Like, I remember, I think when she crossed the line, she crumpled to the ground. Like, it was clear the pressure she was on. And it was the same night Sonia O'Sullivan's silver. It was an incredible night. But what's happened this week in Rome, it's actually two generations when you look at it, really, because the generation of Phil Healy, Thomas Barr, Kieran McGeehan are into their 30s, and then they have this younger generation, Charlene Maudsley, Rashida Adeleke.
Yes, and I shouldn't say about Kieran McGeehan and her 1500 metres gold and the way she burst through the
Absolutely.
Two British
and like
athletes.
Like she said herself, like it was her camogie train, like she's obsessed with camogie. Her father played hurling for Down, and anyone who played hurling or camogie knows you're often boxed in and you need to kind of throw the shoulders to get out of a tight spot, and she certainly did that. Like, that's like some people were a little bit afraid there'd be an objection because sometimes you do, but she didn't break a rule.
Was this also an example of what I might call positive nationalism? That this is where you can have genuine pride in a national team competing, made better for us as well by the fact that we have Rashida Adeleke now being our standard bearer as well going into the Olympics in less than 2 months' time.
Yeah, because I think you have seen the tricolour abused in recent times. Like, you look at some of the people that have been waving it and some of the stuff they've come out with, you know, it's been very disheartening for anybody who's been grown up with the real meaning of what that flag means, which is a million miles from what they think
which is the inclusiveness that
it's
supposed to symbolise.
Inclusiveness. But I think this is a very interesting Olympics, because if you look at Ireland's Olympic history, tends to explain Ireland, like it reflects the Ireland. The Ireland of 1956, when Ronnie Delaney took gold in Melbourne, 15% of the population emigrated. Ronnie Delaney emigrated. What his reaction when he crossed the line at the 1500 metre final was to go down on his knees, cross himself and say a prayer. And that was the time when the Catholic Church was at its strongest. And you go through it, like even 1996, like Michelle Smith, we know what happened afterwards. She kept her mouth. We know what happened afterwards. And that was a time of tribunals and so many scandals across business, across the church, across politics. And the innocence kind of fell away from people. People lost a bit of the innocence they might have had. And I think this team going to Paris is representative of Ireland in that it's a complicated team for a complicated country. It's complicated in terms of backgrounds, beliefs, etc. And I think it's very representative.
Let's hear a little bit of Charlene Maudsley speaking to RT after the women's relay silver medal win.
Yeah, honestly, it's amazing. Like, I'm absolutely beyond exhausted at this point. I was telling myself the whole warm-up, it was just one more lap, but the girls got me through that run. Honestly, I could hear them cheering. I thought maybe I had Femke down the home straight, but just the legs are a little bit dead today. But honestly, to win a medal, I'm so thankful we were able to do it with the girls today. The mix, it was amazing, but there's something special with this group of girls. Honestly, like Brigida said, we have the best time. And yeah, like Sophie said, I love them all.
Okay, Charlene Maudsley, I think, had to do five races this week because she had to sub in near the very close to the semi-final race in the hurdle. So it's extraordinary that she kept going. Okay, well, that's something that's given us a good smile and also, as Kieran said, maybe reflects the changing Ireland. And then there's the story I'm sure you must have really appreciated, Brianna, that we had the Gay Men's Choir Pride event cancelled by a Catholic church in Dublin. So some things change, but by God, do they remain the same.
And this was quite a complex story because the church came back and said that, you know, reading between, you know, the emails that had been published in the Irish Times, it looks like the church was like, all kosher, this is all cool, with, you know, having the Dublin Men's Gay Choir come in as a normal choral event. The thing the church was opposed to was a part of, you know, being part of the Pride Festival, which said, you know, didn't gel with the values and the mission statement of the Roman Catholic Church. And the Gay Men's Choir musical director, you know, said, yeah, we booked it under the name Dublin Gay Men's Choir. The hint was in the name. It was there. They have performed at other churches, Catholic churches before, without it being a problem. But it seems to be the tie to Pride that the church took an exception to. Again, very interesting, given that they knew they were booking a gay men's choir in the month of June.
What do you make of this, Kieran?
It's a bit dispiriting. I know it has. You have to think, you know, that somebody, you think there's somebody that would, you know, would have guessed that this isn't a good move. That, you know, it's by, you know, that there are a lot of people within the church that are trying to put a more forward face to the world and said we are more inclusive than we once were, and this does seem like a backward step. And you just wonder, like, what are the lines of communication like in terms of who makes these calls? And if you're thinking of making a call like that, surely you should go and clear it at the highest level of the church in Ireland, and because something like this doesn't do the church any favours at all.
And this has, of course, taken part in a week when Pope Francis has been accused of yet again using homophobic slurs.
Yeah, this one's a bit more complex because he, according to the sort of Italian Red Top that had reported the piece, he was talking about, you know, letting gay men join the clergy, and he was quoted as quoting somebody else, if that makes sense. He said he's had, you know, people higher up in the church come to him saying there's too many of these slur words in the church. And it was an Italian slur, I guess I would translate directly to the F word. So he was sort of quoting somebody else, but still had used a homophobic slur. Now, this is at odds. Now, remember, this Pope, he's not a regular Pope. He's a cool Pope. He's been trying to really rehabilitate the Catholic Church's image within the queer community. And, you know, he's been quoted as saying, you know, who am I to judge when it comes to if someone is LGBTQI+ and wants to join the church and has goodwill, and has said that there's room in the church for everybody. So he's come out and, you know, been really, really inclusive in his statement. So this was at odds with that. But again, was it just a gaffe? Was he trying to quote someone else and say, look, this is what people are saying, and slipped up and used the word? Or does he actually believe this? I don't know. I'm not that close to the Pope, just between me and you. But it seems to be, you know, a reporting of something else someone said.
Hmm. Of course, he's meeting with a lot of comedians today as well, Kieran, including Irish comedians Ardal O'Hanlon, Patrick Keelty and Tommy Tiernan, who I see didn't take the hat off inside the Vatican either.
That, you know, was the biggest scandal since Ronan O'Gara kept his hands in his pockets.
So what was all this about? Well, because they weren't the only comedians. It seems to be this was a congregation of comedians from around the world.
Yeah, like if you look at the list, like it is a roll of honour in terms of the, you know, of the highest profile comedians in the world, like people like Whoopi Goldberg, Jimmy Fallon, Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Veep and Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Stephen Colbert, Conan O'Brien. Then you have the Irish crew in as well, like Ardal O'Hanlon brought along miraculous medals, which he asked the Pope to touch or bless. And I think that was for his family of quite strong faith. Some people might know that because Matt knows it because he told me. I didn't know it. And Patrick Keelty, which the Late Late Show was there. It's an interesting one, but I suppose, like, is it any more unlikely than the Ireland football team lining up to meet a Pope 34 years ago?
That's right, the 1990 World Cup, yes.
So the Popes are kept busy meeting people, but this was an odd collection, I have to say.
He said as well that it's okay to laugh at God, because you think a lot of these comedians at some stage in their career would have made religious jokes, or
quite
definitely
a few of them.
Jokes aimed at the Catholic Church around sexual abuse and things that happened in the church. So for him to still open up and be like, you know, your laughter unites people, I just think if you're the Pope and you're like, why not? I'm just going to gather some people who I like in a room, call it a commune, come on round to the gaff. Like, that's what the Pope does. It's probably the highlight of the job, really. That and the clothes.
He is starting to look a bit frail, though, isn't he? I mean, is there a touch that he's a bit like the sort of the Joe Biden of the Catholic Church at this stage, with sort of the gaffes and the comments he's making?
Well, he hasn't been in good health. I think it was around the Easter, the various Easter events that popes normally attend, that some of them were cut short, or he had to sit down throughout them. So he is a good age. I'm not sure offhand what he's well into his 80s, isn't he?
Very well into. Yeah. Here's another comment you might enjoy, Brianna. Why would the gay pride choir book a Catholic church trying to make more problems? They're going looking for trouble.
I mean, like, if you want to hear choir churches, it's the acoustics, you know, they're the kind of the prime places for watching choirs. And churches do a load of gigs that aren't related to religion. You can go and see acoustic guitar singers in all kinds of Catholic and Protestant Dublin churches. So, you know.
Okay, another listener says, would it not be a cackle of comedians rather than a congregation? That's from Aidan and Claire. Sure, say. Okay, we have lots of other things to talk about in the second half of the week trending. But, Brianna, why are you leaving us?
That sounded so personal. Like, why are you leaving?
You are.
Why are you leaving?
You're a valuable part of the Last Word team. We love having you in here for the week trending. How could you leave us?
I think that long and short of it is, you know, partly, you know, of course I miss my family. Yeah, I have to say that. They're probably listening. But the main thing is money. My partner and I got to the point where we just did not see a viable future for us in Ireland. And I was calculating it up and I was like, man, like when I was driving forklifts, I was living better than a professional journalist with a degree. And, you know, I grew up very working class. And in Ireland, I'm considered middle class, but my living standards had actually dropped and the maths weren't mathing. So we decided it was time to give Australia a go for a while and see what comes of it. So I'm still doing my column in the Irish Times, so you haven't gotten rid of me completely.
I'm delighted to hear that.
I'm still writing a book, the longest book ever to come out.
I've been talking to you about that for about 18 months, Brianna, at this stage.
Thank you to Penguin and Patricia from Penguin, who is the most patient woman in the world. So, you know, there is still always going to be a touch. I'll still always be in touch with Ireland, and I think it's gotten
under my
skin.
But I thought you'd really settled here.
I had really settled here, and Ireland is under my skin. There's no getting out of it. And I don't think I'll ever feel completely at home in Australia now. But yeah, I just think from a financial and a living quality and also health reasons, you know, I have chronic health conditions and just going back to Australia simplifies a lot of my life. But yeah, it's just time for a new
adventure. Better weather as well.
Better weather. Yeah. It's funny. The weather is actually further down the list than you think it would be. It's just the quality of life and the fact that you get paid 14% pension on top of your salary is another thing, you know. It'd be nice to be able to retire one day.
See, Kieran, we're older, but I mean, we have younger kids and stuff, yeah. And there's an awful lot of a young generation that even if they have jobs here in Ireland, which may seem well paid, they don't cover all the bills and they don't cover the rent, or they don't give them the opportunity to be able to own their own place in the future.
Yeah, yeah, I know, and like we talk about this and we're preaching the converted, everybody out there knows it. Like my stepson is in London with his girlfriend and they're both graduates of NCAD, so they're trying to make by as artists, and she's doing a postgrad in Goldsmith College, and they're just scraping by pennies every month, and that's over there. If they come back here, it'll be the exact same. My 16-year-old will be doing the leave in 2 years. You know, I can't see how he can move out of home, or when, you know, when will that happen for him? I do want to say, I know it's not just because you're sitting here, I'm really sorry you're leaving, because you're smart and funny, and there aren't enough smart and funny people in the media here.
Don't you right?
I'm heartbroken to go, and you know, I just like I'm not going to start bawling on air. And this is the problem. I do go on.
It's really good for the ratings.
I was such a hard person when I moved here, and then Ireland just cracked me open, and now I bawl at the slightest thing possible. It's really changed me as a place, and I'm grateful. And I'm grateful for this show and Matt and all the encouragement that I've had. So. Yeah, it's going to be really awful to leave, but it's been something I've been wrestling with for a long time, and it just had to be done in the end. Something had to give. And, you know, I feel bad giving out because really it's my home, and my parents are picking me up from the airport whinging about how much bags I've got. But, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of Irish people have to leave Ireland every year. Young people, the wages are just not covering the rent, and that's the long and short of it.
We're not letting you go yet. We've the second part of the week trending to come up after this. Brianna Parkins of the Irish Times, Kieran Cunningham, chief sports writer with the Irish Daily Star, remain with us. But let's hear a little bit from the bizarre British general election that's underway. And let's hear a little bit of the British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak. Remember how he abandoned the D-Day commemorations to go do record an ITV News interview? This is the interview with Paul Brand. And he was asked in it if, given how wealthy he is now, he went without anything as a child.
Have you ever gone without something?
Yeah, I mean, my family emigrated here with very little. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was raised. I was raised with the values of hard work.
What did you go without as a child?
We went out with lots of things, right? Because my parents wanted to put everything into our education, and that was a priority.
So what sort of things had to be sacrificed?
Well, lots of things, right?
Can you give me an example?
All sorts of things. So, like lots of people, there'll be all sorts of things that I would have wanted as a kid that I couldn't have, right? Mm-hmm. But famously, Sky TV. Okay. So that was something that we never had growing up, actually. But it was lots of things. But again, that's my experience is obviously going to be what my experience was, what is more important are my values and how I was raised. And I was raised in a household where hard work was really important. You had to work very hard, and family was important, service to your community was important. Mm-hmm. And my parents worked very hard for what they had, and they wanted their kids to have a better life. And I think that's a good thing. And I think actually, if people do work hard, they should get to enjoy the benefits of that.
Famously, Sky TV. Famously. Is that what Rishi Sunak is most famous for? Being deprived of Sky when he was growing up?
I mean, you can really, like, it's going down the coal mines, you know, walking 16 kilometres in the snow barefoot. But I will say, though, there was a big haves and haves not between in the playground between those who had cable TV and non-cable TV. And if you're a child like me who was deprived of not cable TV, you still feel that as an adult. You're like, oh, yeah, that's like, to me, having the channels is still a rich person's game to this day.
Well, it's a rural-urban thing in Ireland because many of us grew up in only having RT and having nothing else. Some people were lucky enough to have multi-channel, as we called it, and the British television. But there was another actually thing, Kieran, that in Britain in the era he's talking about, there was actually at times a snobbishness against having Sky.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
The satellite on the side was regarded as somewhat, not proper thing to have.
And, yeah, that was part of it. And even if you remember The Royal Family with Ricky Tomlinson, if you ever watched it, like the end of one season was they give him a present of a subscription to Sky. You know, so it was very much a working class family thing. And I remember this when I was in college in the summer of 1988, I went to London and I worked for a Donegal company called Kelly Communications, and they were one of the first companies in the UK laying cables. And the people who were laying cables, getting cable TV into the house, it was generally working class rather than middle class estates you went to. That it was there was a reverse snobbery around that. I think that people who went to Eton or went to the public schools wouldn't be seen dead with Sky. That this, you know, they had BBC Two and the last night of the proms, so they were happy.
Of course, the man who's about to become the British Prime Minister, barring a disaster, is going to be Keir Starmer, the Labour Party leader. And during Wednesday night Sky News debate in Grimsby, the audience laughed at him about his background. Let's hear this.
Except I earn a lot of money in the job I am now in. But when I grew up, my dad was a toolmaker. He worked in a factory. It's true. My mum was a nurse, and actually we couldn't make ends meet, which actually isn't a laughing matter. We couldn't make ends meet.
I wonder why they laughed.
Was it delayed? Was it like a delayed laughter from him saying, well, I earn lots of money now, and the audience didn't hear it because of the microphone?
Oh. No, I think they were mocking him because they had this belief, you were a lawyer, so you must actually come from a posh background, rather than actually the fact is that many people who get into well-paid jobs come from solid working-class backgrounds.
I generally love around elections playing like deprivation Olympics, because a lot of politicians have to appeal to a common base voter, which is why Rishi Sunak got so weird about that. Oh, it's Sky TV. But yeah, Keir Starmer is, he bridges that gap of, Labour in the UK, where you have the shop floor working class constituency, and then you've also got the new Labour educated at university. He has to bridge both.
And I think in fairness, Kieran, as well, he's probably been laughed at because he keeps telling everyone that his father was a toolmaker.
Yeah, and you would think that that's on instruction, that they've decided this will go down well with the voters, because they're obsessed with class, like across the water. Like Jeremy Corbyn was he was frequently criticised because his own background had been pretty comfortable, and Islington is a very comfortable part of North London. But I do know that I have seen photos of Keir Starmer. He wears a Donegal training top from 15 years ago
when he plays five-a-side football, soccer, yes.
Which I was baffled by. But apparently, he was himself and his family were on a holiday in Ireland years ago, touring around, and they bought in a sports shop in Donegal when they're passing through. So he has a connection to Tony Blair, whose mother was from Ballyshannon. So maybe that'll get him across.
Okay, a lot of them were a lot of listeners saying was that they were laughing because joke that his father was a toolmaker, therefore he's a tool.
The
carry-on
mentality,
basically. That went over my head.
There's been a few bizarre twists, though, hasn't there, in this? I mean, I love the story as well about an MP working in the Prime Minister's office, putting a bet on for a July election at a time when nobody thought there was going to be an election in July, and is now facing investigation.
Yeah, Rishi Sunak, one of his aides, has been caught red-handed putting a bet on. He's apologised profusely, but I don't know whether criminal charges will be laid or not, because is that bet fixing? Is that, if you're a professional footballer and you were caught betting on your own matches, you'd be in serious trouble. So this is the problem with
it's like insider
companies.
Trading if you're on the stock market.
It happened at the 2016 Olympics. A couple of the Irish boxers bet on their events, and they were censored for it. So in any walk of life, it's taken very seriously.
Okay.
You have inside knowledge.
Now, given that sport has been a big part of our week, what about Rory McIlroy? He was flying yesterday.
Today.
He's not
he's
very much in contention to win the US PGA. But, I mean, what about the way he's been handling his on-off divorce? You don't want to comment on this.
I just don't, where do you start with it? Because when you don't know what's going on in a marriage, it's just like I was talking to Brianna outside about this, and I do not know how any marriages survive in that sport, because they're so self-obsessed and they're always on the road. And you know, you can imagine you have a couple of kids at home, and given their age, the kids are probably very small, and they're screaming, and you're trying to keep them quiet. You're the partner, and you're going to Rory and say, "Rory, can you give us a hand here?" I said, "No, I missed a putt 3 days ago. I'm still thinking about it." No, they're just all that matters is themselves, because that's how they get to the top, and that's such an individual, weird sport that it just takes so much out of you. But this U-turn now, like it does. It reminds me of the Tory thing and the focus groups. And, you know, has he gone to a focus group within Team Rory and say it's better for your brand and for yourself if you try and patch things up?
But he seems to have, if the reports are correct, put a sort of a 6-month limit on this. It's almost like, we'll give us 6 months, if it's not, we're back to the divorce papers going in again.
I like a divorce take backsies. Do you know what I mean? And I think in any marriage, no, in any long-term relationship, you've really looked at the other person and gone, God, I could just do without you at this stage. We've all had that, looking at our partner at one stage. So I think it's very human to, you know, go, no, we're splitting up, and then go, oh, actually, will we try and
make it out? I made a mistake here.
Or will we give it, you know, will we give it another shot and put a time limit on it? And in this children involved, you know, I think there is probably, you know, the first instinct is to try and work things out and to try and smooth things
over.
So
you would feel sorry for him that this becomes such a major story, that when it happened before, was it the Masters or was it the US Open, the original?
Oh, US Open at the moment. Was it just...
Sorry, the PGA? It was one of the previous majors anyway.
Yeah.
And that dominated the headlines that week as he went into the event, and now it's dominating again this week. And most people, when in their personal lives, if something like that happens, it does not make media coverage and social media commentary or us talking about it.
I know it's brought up also, you know, he's broken off engagement, you know, with was it Caroline Wozniak? Before, you know, the invitations have been sent out, and I just, you know, it's a difficult one, but yeah, it is an individualistic, weird sport, like tennis, you know, it takes a certain type of person.
But if he wins the US Open on Sunday and bridges that long, long gap since the last major, you know, everyone was saying, oh, it's because of this U-turn, that's what happened.
Okay, and I probably shouldn't even be saying this, but then everyone's going to be looking to see, will the wife be there at the 18th green to greet him? Because that tends to be the way in these sports like golf and tennis. The partners are there to greet the winners as they come in.
Yeah. And it's an awkward one now, because he does it clearly, and I'm sure on a human level, anybody wants to keep their marriage private, but golfers are some of the most open sports people on the planet. Mm. Like, they give so many in-depth interviews, and Rory has done a huge amount of them over the years. So, like, he has laid himself open to scrutiny willingly, and now people are looking into this, and it must be very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, I hope he wins the golf this weekend, because it's 10 years since he's last won a major.
Yeah.
But the last times that he won majors, in each of them, he went bogey-free in his first round. And I think he did that yesterday for the first time since he won his majors in 2014. Yeah. So hopefully that. Brianna Perkins, you will be back on this programme. I guarantee you, we are not letting you go. You may be heading to Australia, but we are definitely going to make sure that we keep in regular contact with you.
I won't be a stranger.
Brilliant. Thank you for being with us today. Kieran Cunningham, thank you as well.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM. Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.